Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, time for another installment of Get to My House, and we're going to our usual morning motivation. Today's jump-off topic, we might do a whole show on it. Hope for Dream Habitat Project, and I put 2023 because we want to get some momentum. There's not much left of this year anyway. So we want to build up some momentum going into the next year of 2023. So we'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Thank you. All right, time for once again another installment of It's My House. And today, our jump off topic is Hope for Dream Habitat Project 2023. And I just put 2023 up there because I want to, it's the month is almost over, November is almost over. So we want to build up some momentum going into next year. And if you're on Blog Talk Radio online in our scrolling marquee, we have a picture of it, a design of it. I think picture would be a better, more accurate description. In any event, so let's open up the lines. Carlos, good morning. Carlos, good morning. Chris.
Hey, sir.
And Carlos, either one of you, Chris, I guess you can cover the hope, and then Carlos, you can cover the dream habitat part. What is
okay.
it?
Yeah, hope to me is humans on planet Earth. That means all of us have it. We're all part of it. And it takes all of us to actually create a system through our life that we are not alone. And what HOPE stands for in the program is housing our people everywhere by recovering and rebuilding natural disasters and using the recycled material from the disaster to rebuild it, creating a sustainable way of life, but also building a home that'll last 1,000 years, can be recycled 1,000 times, but showing our children that they are the solution to every adult's problem. And now I'll hand it off to Carlos.
Yeah, so I met Chris on – can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. Oh, by the way, I'm broadcasting this on the Dream Habitat Clubhouse room. it's being recorded, so I just want to let you know that
I'm glad you said that, because yesterday we had – man, this happens on Blog Talk maybe about 3 or 4 times a year where I couldn't control anything. So – if you're on, Clubhouse, if something fails safe here, just go to Clubhouse. Where do they go on Clubhouse, Carlos, to hear?
Yeah, right now this is being transmitted live on Clubhouse Dream Habitat Room. So Dream Habitat is a club. It's also a house, which we won't go into, but it's a club Dream Habitat. And right now, if you search Club Dream Habitat, you can join the club. And also, when you join the club, you can see the rooms that are being held, and you'll see that there's a live room right now called Hope for Dream Habitat on Blog Talk Radio. And anyways, that's how they can just listen in if they want. And, of course, if things fail, we could all move to Clubhouse and we would be able to continue the conversation there.
Sure.
But anyways, I met Chris and Bob on for or LA. I don't know what you how you're
either one. We know what you're talking about.
I like LA. I don't know why. I used to live in LA for 20 years, so I'm going to go with LA if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me. Either one. Yeah.
Yeah, so I met both L.A. and, well, actually, Chris introduced me to L.A., but I met Chris on Clubhouse through a regenerative farming group or one of the farming groups, I believe. I forget where. And we started talking, and people had told me, they said, you got to meet Chris. You got to meet this guy, Chris. He's doing something that's very similar to what you're doing. And I started talking to Chris. And we had a very long phone conversation. I think it was like a couple hours. And we realized that we're like Siamese twins, like literally. We're both, everything he was saying, even the phrases he uses, like for our children's children, passing things forward. I picked up some of his criticism. We don't want to hand out. We want to give a hand up, these sort of things. anyways, you know, we were building, I had built a greenhouse in my backyard that grows fish plants and mushrooms. And it's patented, but it's free for personal and educational use. In other words, I didn't want to stop people from growing food on their property. I did want to be able to monetize it in case some corporation wants to copy it and put it all over the place. You know, I have a way of monetizing it or commercializing it or even creating joint ventures with the people that build the greenhouses. In other words, that's the model. And so I documented everything about the build. And then I run into Chris and find out that he's building tiny homes for the homeless. I wanted to build tiny homes that feed the homeless, organic fish plants and mushrooms. And I had the version in my backyard. And then I run into Chris and find out that he actually has, apparently he has production capabilities where they produce metal, kind of like an erector set that you bolt together into a house. And by the way, it can be any size house, as Chris has mentioned in other shows. You know, we're focusing on tiny houses for the homeless, and also a lot of people want tiny houses now, believe it or not. But that doesn't mean we couldn't build, you know, a mansion. And by the way, it would be a literally a bulletproof mansion, because when you do an all-steel construction and you do rammed earth, for example, or Chris was talking about taking recycled plastic and making R53 insulated walls, when you build a structure like that, not only will it last 1,000 years, but also it'll be bulletproof, hurricane proof, pretty much everything proof. A good example is the Great Wall of China is rammed earth, and guess what? It's still standing. There's stuff that's still standing that was built with rammed earth, you know, from centuries ago. So I believe that we've been incorporating rammed earth into our designs. And we think that coupled with a steel construction is going to build a structure that will last forever, that will be very easy to heat and cool. In other words, it'll be a net zero type design. And also that will feed you fish, plants, and mushrooms. So, you know, we've got right now, we've got designs for houses, buildings, skyscrapers that will feed the inhabitants fish, plants, and mushrooms. These structures will also desalinate water because the front of the structure is basically a solar still, because the whole front of the structure is glass. What that means is if you place these over salt water, they'll start generating drinking water. So these structures not only will be able to be used to feed and house the homeless, but also since they're super energy efficient and they can be run from solar panels and wind turbines, these structures will actually produce more energy than they consume, which means you could create tiny cities or eco-villages that produce more energy than they consume that now could have a way of earning income for the inhabitants. So, for example, you could set up a whole entire eco-village for the homeless, right? And now you've got them, now they have a place to sleep and live and take a shower. Now they have a place that they can grow food. This can be completely off-grid, so now they're not putting a burden on any of the existing systems. And on top of that, these eco-villages can produce more energy than they generate, so they actually would become an earning center for cities that incorporate these. So not only would you be housing and feeding the homeless, but you would be generating electricity for the rest of the people of the cities. So I'm super, super, super excited. We're starting a Kickstarter shortly for the Hope for Dream Habitat project. And we're going to have all sorts of perks all the way from, you know, for $10, you get your name on a virtual greenhouse wall because we have the greenhouse captured in the metaverse, which is that could be a whole nother topic. But it's basically you can go visit this greenhouse in a browser or a phone or on VR goggles, and you can actually walk into it, and you can see the fish, et cetera. So one of the perks is going to be putting up a thank you plaque in the metaverse for our contributors. And then the perks go up. You know, you guys have seen these typical Kickstarter perks. But, for example, you know, like at the $20 level, you get your name on the wall, and you get a we have these little pins from OU812 Aquaponics, which is a sub-brand of the aquaponics of the Dream Habitat, because we're doing aquaponics. We're doing aquaponic fish plants and mushrooms. So OU812 Aquaponics pins we'll be giving out. Then there's OU812 aquaponic shirts, and of course that'll be at the $40 level. And of course, when you get that, you get everything below it, and you know how that works. But we keep going up. We have some incredible art from our artists. We also have DJs that want to get involved. And basically, when you purchase their art, at least 10% of it goes towards the Dream Habitat project. And then you can keep going up and up in perks. Like we have a 10 by 20, we have a mini greenhouse that grows microgreens and mushrooms. That's at the $500 level. And then if you go to the $10,000 level, we have a 10 by 20 greenhouse that can grow fish, plants, and mushrooms. And then if you keep going up the perks, we can build you a full custom greenhouse in your backyard, aesthetically pleasing, architecturally designed. That's on the higher ends. And then, of course, all of this activity is because we want to build these to house and feed the homeless and homeless vets. And that's the end of my pitch and public service announcement, unless you have any other questions there, L.A.
Yeah, I've got a question. I'm speaking with my landlord hat on now.
Okay.
I've been landlording since 1983. And one of the things, and normal, you know, 1-2-bedroom apartments, houses, the standard stuff that everybody sees in any neighborhood. Now, one of the things that I've learned over the years is that some people do not know how to live. This might sound crazy because people have different lifestyles. I mean, but that's like real basic stuff. Don't pour grease down the kitchen sink. Or don't put sanitary napkins in the toilet and try to, flush. And I have a bunch of other things, too. So when it comes to these tiny houses or what some people might call extreme homes, and I'm into extreme homes, or what the general public would call the extreme homes, because, I don't like paying utility bills or nothing like that. So I like solar, wind, and all that. Ram houses, I've helped build some places, cottages, using Earthship, methodology and all that. You have a process that will actually educate people and or train people on how to use the particular house that they might be living in? Because a lot of people are just used to, solar, wind, biomass, biofuels, rammed earth. We're speaking a totally different language when we're speaking to the average person walking down the street. So will there be any type of introduction on how to use that particular house so they can have an enjoyable experience? Can anybody hear me?
I'm sorry, I was muted. I was talking. Luckily, Chris has already figured out. He's such an incredible, not only an incredible human being, but super, super innovative. What he does, which I find extremely interesting and is going to work extremely well with what we're doing, he believes, like I do, that, you teach people how to fish rather than selling them fish. Because if you teach them how to fish, they're going to take ownership and they're going to teach other people how to fish. So the way Chris operates, which I think is absolutely brilliant with his tiny home projects, is he'll have a community sponsor a project, pay for the materials, pay for the workshop, right, workshop, and Chris will be boots on the ground freaking building the house. And as he says, we can do the talking after the house is built. So his workshops are not like, hey, you're going to come here and watch me listen and talk, and I'm going to drink beer and watch you, you know. Chris is going to be there freaking on the ground building the thing, and that's what I want to do. And for the aquaponics, we're going to need it, you know, because it's not it's simple for me. I'm a rocket scientist, but I tell other people and they start scratching their heads like, what? There's fish and water and this and that. You know, you're right. Most people are going to have issues with it. But the system that I've designed is very, very foolproof in the sense that it runs from air, which means the fish will always live as long as you don't do something dumb with the fish. The fish are going to be fine. That's the most critical loop. And since each grow bed runs from its own air pump, the chances of all the air pumps going out at once is really, really low. So the system's got a bunch of built-in redundancies that makes it very foolproof. Like I don't go in my, I cannot go in my greenhouse for a month. And this is what I'll see. I'll go in there and the water will be very low in the fish tank because I use air to pump water. But once the water level drops, the water stops pumping. So I will never ever drain the fish tank. Like in some other aquaponic systems, if you get a leak in the system, your whole entire fish tank gets drained. So in this system, the fish tank will never get completely drained. And since it's running from air, the fish will always have oxygen, which means the fish loop will be protected. And then I'll go in and I'll refill in the water and I'll, you know, in other words, I've designed it in a way that I really don't have to look at it very much. So part of the workshops, the adapted workshops, and it's probably now going to have to be like a two-day workshop, right? Workshop workday number one, we build the tiny house, okay? Workshop number two, we build the greenhouse. And part of the workshop on the greenhouse is going to be explaining the system, how it works, and how to be successful with it, if that answers your question. And then, let me just finish up with this. The people that purchase these greenhouses and houses can now... You know, let's talk about the commercial end of it. You know, we're talking about doing good, right? Building a tiny home for a homeless person or a homeless village, et cetera. But also, we can partner with the people that enable these projects to be able to let them sell the commercial version of it within their region. So not only will we be able to help the homeless by actually building stuff for them, but the people that help us sponsor these workshops and build these projects will now have the opportunity to franchise their model for their region. So that way we can go both at it from a humanitarian point of view, and we can also go at it from a wealth creation point of view, you know, commercialization point of view. And that's my thoughts, and it's all Chris's brainchild.
All right. Hold on a minute. I'm going to play this audio. I want you guys to listen to it because it blends into what you're talking about. Then we'll take a call after that.
In 1986, when the Chernobyl disaster sent radioactive clouds all over Europe, we knew we had to do something against nuclear energy. Many parents were really concerned about their children, and so some of us formed a group named Parents for a Nuclear Free Future. We began to educate ourselves in how to save energy. We started in our own home, and then we tried to motivate others to do the same. We wanted the energy company to support us, but they told us no, because we want to sell energy and not to save energy. And so one day we had the idea to take over the grid.
Citizens could generate their own power from solar, hydro, and wind.
small producers are paid when they feed their electricity into the grid. Consumers are rewarded when they save energy.
So then there was only one question. How do we get the power grid? When the election came up to decide who controls the grid, we knew it was now or never.
EWS, the Shunau Electrical Power Company, held two citizen referendums and won them both.
The power company said, well, you have the votes, but we have the grid. And we want 9 million Dutch mark, and either you pay it or we don't give you the grid. So we had a campaign asking people to help us raising this money.
It took EWS 7 long years to purchase the electrical grid.
This power company was afraid that this was the beginning of a movement, and it was.
Under Ursula's plan, homeowners have small power plants called cogenerators. EWS is now collectively owned by more than 1,000 citizens.
A year after we had taken the grid, the German electricity market was deregulated. Every person could buy electricity from the company he had chosen. And that is the idea of renewable power, because it's decentralized.
This is grassroots at its best. More than 100,000 people now have the electric current from this very small city, and they are very proud of it.
We want to have 100% renewable energy in 2050. All studies say it is possible to do that, and so we will do it.
For outstanding environmental achievement in Europe, the 2011 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Ursula Sladek, Schunau, Germany.
All right, and Ursula Sladek and her husband, let me give a backstory on them. Now, the community that they're from a small village in Germany, also near the Schwarzwald, translated in English as Black Forest. But they there was a nuclear power plant that powered the city for electricity. They didn't like the idea of, nuclear energy. So they started out, talk about humble beginnings and small beginnings. They started out, her husband, and maybe two or three neighbors met at the local neighborhood or the village bar or pub. And they started to powwow over this. And as it stated in the audio, it took them about 7 years to basically, shut the grid down or buy them out or what have you. And then they, in the village that they have in Germany, it's all powered by, renewable energy, solar and all that type of stuff. And I think, well, matter of fact, the last I heard, they were doing 400 million euro a year on the commercial side of it. Selling, clean energy, so to speak. Now, there's another village, I forgot the name, in India. They put the grid, the electric grid, out of business when they went solar. Mm-hmm. And during the whole Dream Habitat project, see, that's the kind of vision I see of that. Because I don't know if any of the, like, Duke Energy, I don't know if you'll put them out of business, whatever. But there's a need for housing that fits under Dream Habitat. Because there's a bunch of people, if you go to YouTube, there's a bunch of people, if you put the people, some voluntarily, some involuntarily, that are living in cars, you know, they have various reasons for doing that. Someone, in the, you know, they don't want to pay rent, they want to stack money. Some, they have no choice. Many people are retrofitting buses and boxcars and, you know, that's their traveling home on wheels. Then you have, the whole tiny house thing. And tiny houses really have always been around, but due to the fact that, you know, everybody has internet access now, and the term tiny house has been coined, so to speak, you know, people, particularly in Western countries, are looking for sustainable ways because they don't want to pay a mortgage or they don't want to pay any, like, higher rents. A friend of mine that was living in Baltimore, Maryland, his rent was $700 a month. I told him, man, you know, with that kind of money, you may as well take that $700, go to Home Depot or Lowe's and Menards, buy you some building material, find somebody's backyard and build you a tiny house. You might have to pay a little ground rent or whatever, but it won't be anywhere. Then you'll own the place, you know, or whatever. So this question, both of you actually, I see other communities popping up, like the one that Ursula Sledeck, now what they did, Sledeck and her husband, those houses were already built. So they just changed, you know, from the nuclear energy to, you know, their renewable solar energy. There's another town in Germany, Feldheim, Germany, that is a village. They operate off of 100% renewable. They did it before Sledeck and her husband did their thing. And in this country, I've run across people like in the DMV district, you know, up in D.C. area. I know of people who heat their homes using corn. And their electricity comes through solar with a battery backup, so they're totally off the grid. But my question is, put it this way, I can see villages with the prototype house that you had, at least, you know, online. I see villages like that, but that's my vision. What do you guys see?
I definitely see vision of what you're seeing. The thing is we can create these villages, even if we did them as transitional housing, just to get the homeless moving forward in life. We can turn them into Airbnbs, and now they become a profit source for you to continue living life. And if you could live off your Airbnb, it wouldn't matter what you did in life, all that's yours. And if you were able to change someone's life and then it was able to change your life, then I just think it's, you know, a great combination to actually think of others above yourself, but then think about what yourself is going to get out of it, because every time you pick up someone, you're making our chain stronger. We want to make our links out of titanium, you know, so let's pick it up, mend it, and realize that these villages need to be built. And the one thing about using the material that I make is I can take it back apart and I can put them together, make them bigger, make affordable housing for families through this situation. So just because they are what they are when they show up doesn't mean that's what they have to stay. And that's the beautiful thing about this, is because it comes apart so easy, but it's so strong. But when it comes apart, it can grow and become more. And we can take these villages and make them different sizes, but then turn around and put those pieces together and make a beautiful architecture home that would satisfy a family. But we have to get our people off the street and on our feet. That is key. People are feeling helpless, hopeless, and alone. They need to realize they're not. There is a solution. You know, there's 70 people working in Tennessee right now every day, and they put out 4 8-foot by 20-foot ready-to-live-in homes. Butcher block countertops, beautiful, beautiful homes. And I just need people to know that they can have these options. We've got factories that can send material that would blow that four away by hundreds. So I could send 1,500 square foot homes easily from just one of the factories. So there's three of them, not including the manufacturing facility.
Okay.
So realize that it's not a dream, but it's not something that we're trying to do. It's a reality because it was a dream. And now we need everybody to know this is reality. We can have it. We can do it. We can all be involved in it. And you don't have to quit your job to do it.
Right. Well, there are a bunch of eco-villages out there. But, you don't have to sell them on the idea. They're, the crowd I'm talking about are the people that, I mean, there are people in rent court, eviction court, or bankruptcy court, or whatever. Because that's my opinion. In this country, well, Western countries, I don't want to pick on the United States only. A lot of people just don't know how to live a sustainable lifestyle. And part of that, in my opinion, that's my opinion, is because we're addicted to the comfort and conveniences of urban living on the grid. I mean, you want a light on, you flick it on with a light switch. You want water, you just turn the nozzle, you got water. There's a bus line, there's metros, depending on what city that you're in. Whereas a lot of the things that we're talking about today, and for the last couple of weeks, you're not going to find in New York City. Now, you might find it in New York State, in a rural area. But in Brooklyn, definitely Manhattan, there are a lot of things that we're talking about as of today. Now, 10 years from now, it might be a different story. But as of today, there's a lot of the technology that we're talking about, you're not going to be getting, it's just politically, they're not going to accept it. But like I said, 5, 10, 15 years from now, it might be a different story. So the rural areas, that's why I gravitate towards rural areas. Carlos.
I just said, the rural areas are important, but also when it comes to climate change, the cities are gigantic heat sinks. Right now, our cities are just huge, gigantic heat sinks that are just capturing all that solar energy. And if you take a infrared camera and you just, pan around your city, you will see all the roads, all the buildings are these red hot spots. And of course, anything green is going to be cool. Nature has figured out, why do we have trees? Well, trees are umbrellas that provide shade for everything underneath it and allows everything underneath it to flourish. Our cities are basically gigantic heat traps. So, I agree with you, definitely going rural, has a lot of advantages because you've got the lower temperature of ruralness. But I think we also need to start thinking about what we can do in our cities to make them more habitable and also to address the problem of these cities being heat sinks, And there's a city in Alexandria that was taking recycled plastic that was white or light colored and using it for its road surface because, black asphalt is the worst possible material you could possibly use for a road because it's a heat sink. Black holds in heat, white reflects heat. So this city was actually making lighter colored roads out of recycled plastic to reflect the heat. But if we're really intelligent about the way we design buildings, they would all have green roofs, and they probably would all have umbrellas to shade everything underneath it. And a friend of mine from Grow North, who's another project that I'm on, he builds high-rise vertical farming machines. They're machines that you put on a piece of land, and it's got these carousels that spin around with grow beds on it. So these machines will multiply the amount of food that you can grow on a given piece of farmland exponentially, because now instead of just having one little 4x4 foot square or 2 foot by 4 foot square of plants, that machine will generate 24 of those rotating in that same footprint. But anyways, I'm diverging a little bit. But yeah, you know, I think we also need to think about what we can do in our cities to bring this technology to the cities. For example, we can build these greenhouses on any roof, which means now these buildings could start growing fish plants and mushrooms. Of course, there's all the, you know, I know there's all the permit and, you know, society and legal issues and all that other crap that we have to get over. But, you know, in my version, every single rooftop is a garden. You know, the cities are painted in colors that don't make them into heat batteries. And now we can start getting to a point where cities are livable. You know, you want a lot of green areas, a lot of parks. And then, of course, in the rural areas, in the eco-villages, we can start doing that right off the bat. And just to address something that you mentioned earlier, you know, I can build a tiny home or an airship that's off-grid that has all the comfort, that has all the creature comforts, you know, because...
I've seen those. Solar. You're right.
Yeah.
I've been inside of those airships. Yeah, they can have every creature comfort that you got in Manhattan. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the best, one of the best strategies to get this stuff out, and area code 985, I'm getting ready to open up your mic, would be what I would call the Walmart strategy, starting your little small towns, and because there's a whole bunch of those. Because I know with politicians in big cities, the first thing they're going to ask is, have you done this? And then the next thing, you're going to have to show it to them. And once they see it, then, I mean, because you're absolutely right. Like, the metro area that you're in right now really needs it. But, you know, the cut through all that politics. Right.
Yeah.
But hold on, we got another call here. 985 area code, your mic is open.
Good day, everyone. This is Farmer Jay here in Belize. Just listening in, taking notes. Y'all covering a lot of range of topics.
I'm glad you called. You got the hundred acres of land down there, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, Farmer Jay, tell us, share with us, number one, why Belize, and number two, how did you come across the 100 acres?
Google. why not Belize? Belize is it's a farming country, and I was looking into farming. I was looking into getting around a lot of people who really know what they're talking about, just in case everything hits the fans. You can get around a group of people that know what to do without the machineries and without all the technologies and stuff, who just keep the natural stuff pure. So I'm here and I'm learning and I'm living and we're expanding and looking forward to growing with a lot of this stuff from what Chris and what Carlos has to offer and any other body that has any type of alternative resources that can help people in this country out and that can sustain the future.
All right. Well, 100 acres, you can have your own village, Jayville, or whatever you want to call it. because 100 acres, I do, over the years, I've done, I do a series on black townships that was started in the United States prior to slavery ending and for the first 50 to 60 years after slavery. And there's about maybe 800 of them in the United States, but they're all the way from, from Canada all the way down in Argentina. And they basically built towns. Some of those towns, I've been in about, in Oklahoma, I've been in three. I've got a house in Taft. Then I've been to Summit, Oklahoma. These are towns that were built by former slaves. And then, of course, Oklahoma was never a slave state. But in Maryland, you have Highland Beach. Highland Beach, Maryland, which is about, I think that was built on something like 51 acres. The first recorded town, black township in in the United States, was founded by a former slave who manumitted himself, and that manumitted means he bought out his master. He bought out his contract so he can get free and wouldn't be legally a slave anymore. That was in Missouri, so he crossed the river to Illinois. And he bought, I think, 80 acres of land, and he named the town New Philadelphia, Illinois. It's just a historical landmark there because they didn't repopulate and keep the population up. People just moved out. But he was the mayor of that town, and they had a pretty productive community when it was going. But they have other towns in Illinois of historic value. Pembroke, Illinois, which I was there about 3 years ago, and Hopkins Park, Illinois. Now, a lot of the towns, now, let me give you the landscape of the United States. There are 19,500 municipal communities. Some of those that have a municipal charter. Some of these towns have a population of just one person, but they have a municipal charter. And then others like New York City, you know, have over 7 or 8 million people. I think there are over 3,800 ghost towns in the United States. So a lot of towns that, particularly around the turn of the century, that became ghost towns, my theory is at this point they didn't bring electricity to their towns fast enough. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of your towns grew to the size they are now is because when people got together and formed a municipal or got a municipal charter and formed, got an electric company and, they typically cities might sell it, they'll keep the water part. That's how a lot of these towns did grow. So the ones that didn't do that. But now I'm looking at a lot of these larger cities. Let me put it like one of our listeners, Pleasant Stephan, said. He lives in Chicago. So if you're in a city any size like Chicago, he says you need to basically become or be wealthy to live in those towns. Whatever your definition of wealth is. So there are a lot of people that have been kicked, what I call off the grid. So you have a lot of people living in cars, trucks, vans. You also have in various cities, tent cities, but a lot of these people, if you would say, look, you know what, if you would just go an hour and a half, 30 minutes in this direction, or 45 minutes in that direction, or an hour in that direction, you can basically live in a sustainable house. And I like Chris's idea of, because we're on the same page with this, because as a landlord, I learned, because I got tired of people tearing up my stuff. I came to the conclusion, if you teach a person how to build their own house, they're not going to tear up their own house. You don't have to worry about stopped up toilets. You don't have to worry about rent court. You don't have to worry about building inspectors or code enforcement. Just teach. That's my whole philosophy because I just got worn out as a landlord. I feel, I'd rather teach somebody how to go from landlord to owner or from homeless. Now, homeless is a special thing because there are different distinctions of homeless. So let's say you're the working homeless. Okay, and then teach them how to build their own house, and then teach them the distinction between, because I really am in the housing business. I have a little bit of real estate, but I'm in the housing business because I'm really not a big fan of real estate particularly in large cities, because and with real estate, and here's the difference between how a house and real estate. And I'll start off with real estate. Any housing that is permanently attached to the land in a settlement known as a town or city, that's classified as real estate. Your senior defect, you don't own the property outright. You got a bundle of rights. You can live in it, you can rent it out, you can sell it, this, that, or the other. But your senior de facto partner is the local taxing authority. So if you don't pay your municipal water bill, if you don't pay those municipal taxes, your senior partner can foreclose on you, kick you out of the house, and then resell it to somebody else. Places like Flint, Michigan, places like Columbus, Ohio, they have land banks. Land banks are inventories of real estate that the local tax authority, that somebody didn't pay the water bill. Baltimore's got it too, I believe. Somebody didn't pay the water bill. Somebody didn't pay the property taxes. So the city foreclosed, evicted them. And that's real estate, you have a senior partner. Now, there's a whole bunch of other communities around the United States where you have a senior partner, but the taxes are like really, really low. Like I got 10 acres in Texas. My property tax bill, if I pay it late, is less than $38 a year. All right. No problem with that. Whereas I switch off the house I have in Washington, D.C., the property taxes on that are $5,000 a year. And if it's vacant, it goes up from there. All right. So then you got to figure out strategies on, you know, how can I balance this whole situation out? So now with housing, all right, if you don't have it permanently attached to the ground, like a mobile home, okay, a tiny house on skids, a tiny house that you just placing on a deck, or something like Chris Clowns was talking about. Let's say you have something built and is not on a permanent foundation. All that is private housing. You own it outright. You're not going to be taxed. Granted, you're probably going to, if it's on your own land, you'll still have to pay property taxes, but it's better than if, you know, your the building itself, the dwelling itself, will not be, at least on all the places I know about, there won't be a tax assessment on that. And in my opinion, tax assessments, just my personal commentary right here, it's really to the advantage. Let me use my house in D.C. The tax assessment is over $425,000. That sounds good. That sounds good. But the only person that really, or entity that benefits from that, is the local taxing authority in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, I've got to come up with $5,000 a year, or they'll put that up for sale. Okay. So I just rather, you know what, I don't need the equity. You know, I'd rather build something. I don't need an inflated tax assessment. You know, I'll build something, own it outright, and if I want to rent it out, I control the cash flow. I am the senior partner with that. All right. The little villages that we're talking about, like Farmer Jay's 100 acres, see, he can Farmer Jayville, he can have his own town. That's where I'm at mentally with that. But most people, you know, we got to crawl before we can walk. So I guess we can teach them, you know, because what Carlos was talking about, you know, I love Whole Foods. I love the ambiance of going to Whole Foods. It's a cool place to hang out. But it can get expensive. I remember one year I said, you know what, I'm going to eat at Whole Foods every day for lunch. I started on Monday. I went till Thursday, and after my meal on Thursday, that's it. I had spent $70 on just lunch. Because I'm looking at, Anything that gets near $100, I'm looking to buy building materials or something that I can build. So anyway, that's me and my little rant. I don't even know how I started on this. But anyway, 619-768-2945, that's the number to call. We're talking about today Hope for Dream Habitat Project, which is that's where the ball's going. That is where, in my opinion, not everybody's going to jump on a bandwagon, but that's okay. That is okay. All right. But if you don't want to feel like working for a bank for 20 to 30 years of your life, then Hope for Dream Habitat Project is where the ball is going and where it's at. So that's my a big promoter of what they are doing.
Hey, L.A., I got a question for you. Can you hear me?
Sure. Yeah, I can hear you.
This is Carlos. This is Carlos from Hope for Dream Habitat with Chris Collins. And we've also, I know Farmer Day is still on the stage. How do we execute this project in Belize? We've got the technology. We've got the materials. We've got the land. Of course, it's always the missing component, right? The funds. And it seems like you're pretty business savvy. I mean, from just hearing you just these few days I've known you, you've got properties all over the place. How would we go about doing a major project in Belize? We need to get some major real estate company involved. What would be your recommendation?
Farmer Jay, you there? His light's still there.
I'm here, but
well, I can ask.
I really don't know. I thought I was going to get that answer from y'all.
You know what?
I'm asking out loud.
I've got an answer.
Yes.
I've got an answer. Okay. And it was on here 2 weeks ago. A week before. It was either a day. All right, Chris was, and I were already in contact, but Chris wasn't on air with us that day. It's about 2 weeks ago, not quite three. I had three young ladies on from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. For those who don't know the backstory, let me quickly give it now. Two young ladies, let's say three because it's three of them, they ran across a piece of land in rural Georgia. So they said, you know what, we can get this land, you know what, if we, you know, we pony up with, you know, we don't have enough between the three of us, but, you know, so they say, well, look, you call 10 of your friends, I'll call 10 of my friends, you call 10 of your friends. So between the three of them, they called 10 friends each, and out of that, they came up with 19 families. And what they did was, now they just used email. They didn't do no blogging, vlogging, or nothing like that to start off with. Just email. And they live in Metro Atlanta right now as we speak. And what they did was they took tours. It's get in the car or get in the van or whatever. And they took, it was a 2 mile trek from Atlanta, Georgia to what they call Freedom, Georgia. All right. And the original plot of lot that they bought was 97 acres, just around it. It was 96.71 acres. Well, it's 90, just around it. So after that, so the cat got out of the bag and they got some publicity and their story started to go viral. So they've gone from that original 97 to 502 acres. Now, how did they do it? By simply giving tours. Showing people vacant land and explaining the vision and then allowing people to see their own vision, and that's how they were able to go from zero money to 97 acres to 502 acres. They had campouts there and everything else. Now, for Belize, over the years I've produced other people's podcasts and that have nothing to do with real estate, housing, and all this other stuff. And there are a bunch of people that love to travel. And if you offered a camp out and people bring their own tents, If you held a camp out for singles and all kind of singles, you will get the money to fund that 100 acres any kind of way you want to do it. That's my opinion on it.
That's what we've been doing because that's like the only option.
Well, that I've seen that work, but that's how they got theirs funded.
Why don't we, you know, I'm brainstorming here. We just recently met a incredible lady on Clubhouse named Desiree. I forget her last name. It sounds like patent. But anyways, she's in charge of the women in technology. She's in charge of the Small Business Association for Women. She's a realtor, mortgage. She's in charge. She's connected with the real estate development associations and things like that. She just hosted a 3-day sustainability conference for women. It was a masterclass. And it had all these incredible people coming in on sustainability. You know, getting somebody like that involved, and of course the marketing, right, could launch a project like that in Belize. You know, but you need those hi-fi people that have the access to the big budgets and the capital, because you know you're talking about marketing. You know, when you're talking doing an eco resort, really, if that's what we wanted to build, say, in Belize, which would be the perfect thing, right, an eco-resort. You know, you're talking, you know, big, big bucks. And, of course, we would need marketing and all that. And I'm going to reach out to her and see, you know, maybe she knows somebody that might be able to help in a project like that. And you never know unless you ask, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But the Freedom Georgia Initiative, I don't know that, you know, that I'm just speculating. They probably have taken in at least $400,000 in the last couple of years on that project. But they, and you got, I know one thing, the original 19 families, they each got like, I think, 2 acres each out of the original 97 acres.
Wow.
So 19 from, you know, an acre is a football field, man. So that's a lot. So they got two
that's
acres each. Now, when they went up to 502 acres, I think they expanded it to up to 6 acres. So you can get 2 acres up to 6 acres. And we archived that. Yeah, they were selling lots. Yeah.
I see the model. They bought the land, and then they're selling lots on the land. Interesting.
Right, and they're learning as they go. They didn't have a business plan for this at first. It's just what can we do to secure the first 97 acres, and then from brainstorming, because what I understand also, they have Zoom calls several times a week. So it's. You know, it's something simple like that, but with Belize, number one, is an exotic location. You know, backpackers, travelers, singles. I know a bunch of people that go all over the place, and these are just single people that they don't care. The conversation that we're having on sustainability and dream product, they don't care about none of that. All they care about is a turnkey situation. So if you present them with a turnkey situation, and then some will go for a pioneer situation. There's a lot of people that, you know, if you do a workshop let's see on top of it, tiny house building workshop for singles, you're going to get some takers that are going to pay some money just to come to Belize. And then if you offer an opportunity, either where they can buy some of the land or lease it for a vacation spot, you'll have people that'll take that offer also. And in the process, you lure men with the sex appeal. Oh, you sell the silver, and when they get there, you give them the steak.
Tiny home timeshares. I've been involved in those timeshare. Come to Massanutten and get a free weekend skiing, right? And you get there,
right?
And now they're selling you timeshares for some condo, you know, in Massanutten. Interesting.
Yeah, you
and
sell. I mean, it's just like
because they keep being used, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's just like let me use Apple. You know, when Steve, the way I look at it, Apple products, the company, Apple was really Wozniak, in my opinion. Everybody can have a different opinion. It was really Wozniak. Steve Jobs was the sizzle that sold Apple. You know, technically, nobody knows. I mean, nobody cares about the inner workings of how iPhone works. All they care about is it's aesthetically, it looks pleasing. It's the thing to have. And even, what do you call those Apple, what do you call Apple stores? You know, Apple stores, you can just go hang out. So if your place in Belize becomes like the known place to hang out, I know a guy, he passed a few years ago, Charles Tyler. Charles Tyler was a guy from Philadelphia. The country of Brazil really should have paid him to be their de facto ambassador. He really pumped up Brazil so much just by doing podcasts like we're doing right now that he would take guys, I mean, on the same plane with him, 7 to 10 guys who had never been outside of the United States because he was selling the sizzle of Brazil. Since then, several guys have relocated Brazil. They got Brazilian girlfriends. But sizzle sells, I'll just put it that way. Whatever, what your project in Belize or anywhere, figure out the sizzle and figure out the sizzle and your sizzle will bring in all the financing that you need. And that's my editorial on today for that. So let's see, Chris, any comment before we go to our next caller? All right, Chris might be building something at the moment. Farmer Jay, any questions on that?
I'm ready. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris. We're listening. Oh, next call. Okay.
No, I was saying I'm here.
Farmer Jay.
I'm just saying, let's do the next call.
Okay, all right. Let's go to 314 area code. Your mic is open.
You know how many people live in manufactured homes here in the United States? According to one,
it's a bunch of them.
22 million.
That's a lot of people.
And you have manufacturers that have displays set up on the national capital, on the mall. In this past June, they had about 17 manufacturers had their homes on display, and hundreds of people came out and took a look at them. So, yeah, you can build communities like that with manufactured homes. They not only do it in homes, they do it in schools, school buildings that come out with manufactured, and all the carpet and the blackboards and everything attached to the sections when they come out and assemble them, and even air conditioned in the walls. So you're ready to go.
You're absolutely right. Matter of fact, Pianca, let me piggytail on that. For some of you might know, matter of fact, Chris or Carlos, I don't know if you've heard of it, you might have. There's an event sponsored every 2 years by the Department of Energy called the Solar Decathlon, where you got some college kids that they design off-grid solar homes, and it's a competition. It goes about 3 weeks long or whatever. But it's an educational piece, and that attracts a lot of people. So something like that can be done with the project that you're talking about, Because like what Chris was talking about when he first came on, Chris can really explain it better than I can. You know, particularly like inner city children, teach them how to build, or teach them, you know, about how to grow food using the project you have. So that there are various ways that you can market to specific demographics. That's what I call the sizzle. And once you get them there, you know, you can get them. You lure them in with the sizzle, and then when they get there, you give them the steak. At least that's how I look at it.
Now, another thing, I tell you about these African countries that have offered land for Black Americans if they want it. In Liberia, with the River G, they offer 750 square miles. You have all you want as long as you do something with it. In Ghana, in my wife's area, in the Volta region, one tribe, offered 35,000 acres of land. Zimbabwe, when Robert Mugabe was alive, he told black farmers that was complaining and wanting to have lawsuits against the United States Department of Agriculture. He said, you can come over and have as much land as you want to farm. Another offer like that was made in Kenya. So it's not that these opportunities don't exist. It's that people don't want to get involved in them. And that is the major thing. 750 square miles, you know what that looked like? That's like driving from New Orleans to Detroit. Make a right turn that same distance. Make a left or another right turn that same distance. Make another right turn. Drive that same distance. Make another right turn and end back up in New Orleans. That's 750 square miles. And there's a guy that was involved in that. He lives in Florida. His name is Samson. And I was trying to get him to come on your show, but I guess he didn't have time. So these opportunities for land always is out there. You can do what if people want to get involved. Question is, many of them don't want to get involved for various reasons. And I can understand, because when you build land out in rural areas, you got to be, and see, you can't do anything you want, because especially like putting in a septic system, for instance, you got to go by according to what the state lays out for septic systems, and a lot determines whether you are close to a lake or underground body of water. It determines what type of system you have to put in. They can cost up with $30,000. And, I mean, that's just the way it is. And you can build a home that you're going to live in, but if you try to sell that to somebody else, then that's when the rules and regulations and specifications and codes come into play, because let somebody else move into that house without making sure that it meets all those criteria, then the community, the county, would be liable for whatever happened to the individual. So it just depends on what people want to do, L.A.
That's true. You're absolutely right. Hold on, Pinock. We got another call here. Area code 305. 305, area code, your mic is open.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I'm calling in, Kristen. Carlo Bassett is calling and speak about the event that we have coming up at Art Basel. They're joining us, and I'm super excited to have them. We're going to be focused on the arts of sustainability and consciousness, and they're bringing down their tiny home. And going to be sharing all that they do in the space, as well as speaking on how we can solve our homeless problem. My name is Saber First Lady Chavez. This is my 9th year curating at Art Basel Miami. I'm also the advisor of the City of Miami Arts and Entertainment Culture Board. And we're excited. This is the Fridge Art Fair. It's happening November 29th through December 3rd in Alapata, Miami, Florida. And so we're excited to have everybody and just really focus on sustainability and consciousness. That's my curation. It's interactive forums and then also panels where they'll be speaking, as well as interactive events as far as intentional eating. We're talking about the art of plant medicine. Also, we're going to have a sustainable fashion show with some of our sustainable designers, one from LA and one from New York. And so I'm really excited to invite everybody to the space down there in Miami. And I can be reached at prandartsagency@gmail.com, and or you can find me at 1STLADYCEIBA on Instagram and PR and on Instagram as well, or fridgeartfair.com if you are an artist, vendor, or sponsor interested in helping us out. Thank you so much, and I'm enjoying the show, guys. If you have any questions, I'll take a moment to answer any.
Well, I've got a question.
Sure.
I haven't been to Miami in about 3 years.
Okay.
What? What are there any tiny houses in Miami?
Well, I mean, I think I haven't really seen any. I'm sure there's some out probably on the outskirts. But as you probably know, Miami and LA are two of the most the biggest homeless populations in the country. And so
right.
it's really an important market to get into and start teaching all that they bring between Chris and Carlos. I haven't really seen any, but I'm sure there are maybe a couple in the mix somewhere. But it would be nice
because every time
on a bigger scale.
Yeah, because I went to school in South Florida, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, where it was less concrete. And it's a great city to hang out in and have a good time. But you're right. If you're going to find any down there, you'll probably have to go to the outskirts of Miami or into Dade County itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you'll probably find some out in Dade County.
I got a question. Why are there so many homeless people? And you made mention of L.A. and Miami. Those are two warmest states in the country. So you think these
right.
people want to be there in those two states? They ain't going to be laying out on the streets in Chicago in the wintertime, that's for sure. But why are these people in this position where they're homeless? And then if you get them a home, how are they going to maintain it?
Well, I would say just from my perspective, sadly, a lot of our people are veterans, and that's one of the biggest letdowns from our own government to see our own people having mental health and issues coming out of serving for our country. And I've sat down with many homeless people, and they're some of the most brilliant people from doctors on through. And, you know, every situation is different. It's not for us to really judge how they got there, but help them find, you know, a way to – for one, feel and regain their pride and regain the help that they might need. Sometimes it's that simple. And then, you know, obviously just kind of looking at it, like you said, from a longer term range, how can they continue to, you know, move forward in their lives. But, I mean, Chris Collins can probably answer that question better than I can. But what I've seen is that when you have good communities and rehabilitation in that community and you offer a lot of different resources from, you know, feeding the homeless, which I believe Carlos is working on that, and teaching people how to grow their own food, And just giving them a sense of pride and community. A lot of people appreciate that, and that in itself can be a mental change, a mental shift, just like when we take a shower and get dressed every day, how good we feel about ourselves, right? And so everybody, you know, just adding value to people's lives, giving them a place to live, really helping find the solutions to the problems, and then, yes, kind of coming up with long-term solutions. But there's a lot of
information. I hear all that, but you still didn't answer the question then. How do they pay for it? Because what you're saying, and really, I wish everybody luck and everything, but if you serve in the service, when you come out of the military, they give you stipends to join, stipends to stay in for long. So you have a lump sum of money that you can invest however you want to do it. But what I'm saying
is that's not necessarily true.
Oh, it's not. Well, but the thing
I mean, for example, I'm a veteran.
Well, let me finish now what I got to say. Can I please?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The question is who's going to pay for those stuff? You say the government. Well, that still goes back to the people. Now, I think that the veterans should have resources that can help them to when they come out of the military, and I know of, that they should have resources that can help them to do the things that they need to do in order to blend back into society, especially if you have veterans that have been disabled, lost limbs, lost the lower extremities and things like that. I'm perfectly fine with that. But when you got the homeless, I know people in the homeless in St. Louis, if you gave them homes, which one organization did, but they left those and went back to what they was doing, especially in the summertime. It seems like they just like being outside in the summertime. I don't know.
I could probably address some of your issues. This is Carlos. You know, as far as the military, you know, I joined the military for educational benefits, but while I was in the military, because the economy was up, they cut the GI Bill. So, you know, when I got out of the Air Force, I had nothing. You know, I mean, I had saved a little bit of money, but, you know, the old GI Bill that I think is what you're talking about, you know, when you got out, you had a stipend, you go to college, et cetera. It changes with the economy. When the economy is doing well, they cut that out. When it's doing bad, they bring it back in order to lure people into service. But back to your other point about where this comes from, right now we're spending money, from taxes, we're spending money on food stamps, welfare, and other programs that aren't working as well as they should. And, you know, we could take the money that we're using for that and put it towards actually helping the people that need it. And until we help the people at the very bottom, we can't help the people that are one step above the very bottom. And in America, we've been brainwashed to people that have less than you and to idolize the people that have more than you. And meanwhile, the people that have more than us are extracting all the wealth. You know, Americans, you know, they have a huge problem with, quote, welfare, you know, helping people that need it. But we seem to have no problem with corporations coming in and getting corporate tax breaks. And we idolize these people, you know, these CEOs, we idolize them. And meanwhile, they're not paying their fair share of taxes. They have lawyers inside and outside, so they avoid paying taxes. They spend money lobbying to change the laws in their favor. And who ends up getting screwed is the rest of the people. And then to make things even worse, they've got the people that have just a little bit more than the people that have nothing saying, oh, the people that have nothing are the problem. They're the ones that are causing the problem. When in actuality, all of the profit has been siphoned off from the middle class by the corporations. If you look at the data from 1954, you know,
can I address
all
what you
that,
just said so far? Because you accumulate a lot of things there.
You know, all that money that they made, that the corporations made through increased efficiency, did not translate to wages. which means wages have been plummeting while corporate profits have been going through the roof. And this is why we have people that are hurting, both on the left and the right. And then on top of that, it's been politicized to make both the left and the right hate each other when we all should be working together to solve these problems, like homelessness, for example, because solving homelessness will save the people that are one step above homelessness. And that's the way you have to look at it, is that, you know, you can't hate on the people that have less than you. Those are the people that need help. Back to your answer, you know, how will these things be taken care of? It has to be a community project. The community has to buy into it. And part of the problems with solutions to get forced down people's throats, specifically with, like, say, indigenous people, you know, people come in and they're like, this is what you need. This is what we're going to give you. And they don't want it. You know, the way you're supposed to operate is you go to the tribal elders, okay, of an indigenous population. You get them to buy into it because they're the ones that can make sure that it succeeds. The same thing when you're talking about, you know, homelessness, et cetera. You can't just go into a city and start putting up a bunch of stuff and saying, here, take this, you know, it'll help feed you. You know, it's going to get vandalized. It's going to get torn apart, okay? You need to get the community involved in building it, maintaining it, and protecting it. But anyways, that's my rant on that.
Well, you said that people hate poor. Well, that's just – actually, I see the opposite. I see where the poor and those in a certain lower class hate the rich and those that have, because they actually – it's those at the top that pays the most in taxes. Another point – those things that you made mention of, I've kind of lost my train of thoughts, but they still have to be paid for. You know, the lady says she knows a doctor. Well, why come that doctor is not working in the hospital or working in his own practice where there's constant need and calls for people in those classes of employment and skills, because they're constantly hiring foreigners to come into your hospital and work in those capacities. So I think that to say that the government, you know, the government is still the people. And I think that those that are in that position, there's opportunities for them to get out of those positions. But as I mentioned before, you seem like you have these problems in two of the warmest states in the United States, that being California and Florida, and maybe it's this that they just don't want to. They like the way they live it, and some people do that.
I've been homeless, and it wasn't a choice. Okay, and you know, it wasn't something that I was enjoying or looking forward to. And I've talked to a lot of homeless people. I know Brother Chris has as well. And yes, there may be a few that like the hobo lifestyle or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are hurting with families and don't have any place to sleep or any way of getting food.
Well, there's shelters, you know, that people can stay in until they get on their feet.
The shelters are over.
If you was a bill a community, I mean, put streets and roads and electric and how, then you bring, how would they maintain it? They still don't have to go out to get a job to maintain it. If not, then you got a worse of a quote-unquote welfare problem than what you have now.
You may have missed the earlier part of the show where we were talking about that, you know, part of what we're building is also a way for them to grow food, plants and mushrooms, which also gives them an income stream. And also, you weren't on the show earlier, these communities actually produce more electricity than they consume, so that now these projects can actually become an income source for the city. So now you're giving people a place to live, so now they have an address. With an address, you can get a job. Now you're teaching them how to grow food, which means they can feed themselves and get off of food stamps and welfare. And these, you know, once they learn how to grow food, they can also have a way of making money by selling the food, you know, so, So,
what you're saying is that's how it would pay for itself.
That's how it would have to pay for itself. There would have to be a way of income being generated. So you're right.
You kind of contradicting yourself, because a person that work 8-hour job is not going to come home and grow it and work in their garden in order to grow to do the work that's necessary for the garden to produce.
Well, when they have an 8-hour job, they don't need to grow the food anymore, you know, so that's fine. If they have a job, beautiful.
Yeah,
but if they want their job to be growing food, then they could do that as well. But anyways, I don't want to get this into a huge back and forth. You know, we're trying to do something. You've raised some good points, and I agree with some of them. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find out how would all this be paid for. And, you know, people talk about corporations. Well, hang on for a second. Corporations hire people. Corporations pay taxes. Corporations also are usually, and many of them, are publicly owned, where anyone can own a share of the corporation. Corporations pay dividends that people use that's retired, whoever, to supplement their income. You know, I was just looking at Archer Daniel Mitchell. They paid a total of $1.60 per share for the year 2022. So, no, a corporation does a good thing, a very good thing.
And they can be involved in solving the problem also, you know, so they could, you know, that's the other model we're going after, is looking at corporations that are trying to be more green, you know, to start, you know, helping with these initiatives, because it helps them, you know, taking some of their profit and helping people that need it is good for their business as well. And also getting people off the street and being part of society also helps the corporations, because now they can become consumers, you know. So, you know, this helps everybody. And I'm not against corporations. I have my own business. I'm self-employed. What I am against is corporate welfare, you know, and that's welfare to the corporations that don't really need it. You know, they're already making enough profit. They don't need corporate welfare on top of it. And I'm just pointing out that, you know, we seem to have no problem with corporate welfare, but heaven forbid we try to help people that actually need it. Anyways, LA, I'm sorry.
You know, real quick, we talk about corporate welfare, and I had a discussion earlier with someone about farming. Your commercial farms, one of the reasons why small farms can't compete against commercial farms, because they can do it with mechanization. Also, if you didn't subsidize farming, then people would no longer do it. And it's the government that provides the insurance, crop insurance, because if you have a condition where your crops are lacking, or even your crops don't grow, then that farmer going to say, the heck with it, I'm going to the city and become a mechanical or electrical engineer. But then now you see, we got a problem now in the United States where, for instance, in the state of Iowa, which was a milk capital, you have milk farms that's going out of business periodically. So now we got to the point where we're looking to import milk from China. Even Walmart itself has started to have its own milk farms because they couldn't get it from the sources that we had with small farms. And the small farms went out of business because the market wasn't there. So all those things are complicated, but you have to keep corporations going, people that's doing those activities. If not, then you're going to be subjected to imports, and then we know what happens there.
We got another caller here. 602 area code. Your mic is open. 602.
Good morning. Hey, it's Nicholas Ledbetter. How are you doing?
Oh, how are you doing? Good.
Yeah, I'm going to try to touch on my points here in order. What we're trying to do is a model that's already proven super effective in developing countries, which is grassroots innovation, where you really do try to touch the people that are suffering the most, that need the most help, and you connect the people that are already in the space doing ineffective solutions to do effective ones. And something that really makes this, like you said, people more accountable is the community aspect, getting not only the people that are going into it, but getting the community that's supporting it and getting the community that's on the fence about it involved, so they maintain a relationship with them and they feel a sense of home. You can't a lot of reasons why I've talked to homeless people and they're still out even if they've got a place to sleep is because their friends are outside. Their community is outside. The only people that care about them are the other homeless people they've met, and they don't really have ways of talking to each other, so they just hang out. On the food sustainability, just before that, there's a lot of people aren't aware of the cost associated with maintaining the homeless if we don't take care of them. Taking care of the dead bodies, the extra medical bills, the support programs that aren't effective, they're barely able to maintain because they don't have proper funding. There's a lot of cost associated with ineffective solutions that aren't being executed right, not because of a lack of effort, but quite the opposite, just a lack of attention and focus, and a lack of community involvement and awareness. So starting with people and getting them involved on a personal and community level is a key point for any grassroots innovation to be successful. And these people are resourceful. So once you get them involved in helping with each other, they'll do surprising things to keep the community going as long as you keep it in a nurturing environment. But there needs to be counselors. There needs to be people to teach them farming skills. There needs to be someone that wants to teach them building skills. So they can actually have trades when they come out of here, something to learn while they're in there, and people to interact with that are friendly, going through similar things, and can share stories. I forgot where I was going to go from there. I'll just end on that.
Next, there are plenty of examples. There are plenty of examples globally. The Barefoot College, if people are – I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Barefoot College, but for those who are not, you can look them up online, Barefoot College. They basically take what they say are illiterate grandmothers that have no technical background, and they train them how to be solar engineers, and they go back to their village.
That's awesome.
Excuse me?
I just said that's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't expect
look up the Barefoot College, my whole thing is, once people are exposed to something, once they're exposed to it, once they see it, once they have some awareness of it, and how they can personally benefit from it, and I'll just start with myself. With me, it started with going to a birthday party in Germany. Somebody showed me, it was the first piece of biofuel that I saw, a little wood chip pellet of compressed wood. And then, I started to recognize, because I saw windmills every day, and I was sleeping in a solar passive loft and dual flush toilet. But once I learned the power of how much money that you can save yearly or eliminate utility bills. See, that's what got it for me.
Are you talking about
utility bills? I was born in Washington, D.C., raised in D.C., and I'm anti-city other than to go out and hang out with friends. But people are exposed to it. And then as Chris said, the first time he was on here a couple of weeks ago, you can bring the services, whatever they're stuck in the city doing, you can bring it out to your location. Farmer Jay can place that on his 100 acres or any way you want to, so you can have your own community. There are about 12 to 14 new communities that are popping up in the United States on a weekly basis. We just, like I said, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Freedom Georgia Initiative, they were on here, and they just started with 3 women and an idea. How can we get this 97 acres of land? Now they're up to 502. And they're learning by doing. And something that Carlos said on here, and correct, guide me, Carlos, on this, it, every problem has a solution. Or in many cases, most problems have multiple solutions. And attached to every problem, there's an invention. That gave me a paradigm shift. Yeah, potential invention. You're correct. So that means there's a whole bunch of opportunities out here. How do you raise the money for whatever? I'll just go back to the fundamentals. Start where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can. And the universe will take care of the rest.
Awesome.
That's beautiful.
Brother, you've got so much wisdom, and I feel so honored that you know, Chris found you, and this is a wonderful show. You've been doing this for 9 years now, is that right?
Yeah, 9 years next month. Well, see, here's the thing, the whole thing. All right. On the phone right now, just in today's conversation, nobody can see the whole picture. All right. Chris has got answers. You have got answers. Nicholas Neber has got answers. Piyaki, who is he's a serial when he was working. I mean, he built large structures, stadiums. He's designed seaports. That's Piyaki's, that's his, you know, thing, and STEM projects and all that. So we all, it's just simplifying it. And then, because that's why I like, you know, what you're doing, Chris. Well, you and Chris and Carlos and Chris are doing, because it's fundamental. It's simple. And the network that you guys have, just like Ms. Chavez, I don't think she's online right now, but because if she was on there, I was going to ask her how much do rooms or like studio apartments rent for in Miami? Miami's expensive. However, if you take, because you had people living under bridges in Miami. But if you would just take some of those people, just like with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, how you fund stuff, if you just take them, expose them to a different alternative of housing. And then, I mean, if you teach, that's why I play some of those videos, like the one with Lauren Nelson, who's just 12 years old right now.
No, you know, that's a beautiful idea.
If you go on YouTube, if you go on YouTube and type in 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds who have built their own tiny houses, or Chris Collins, he shares some stories from time to time, examples of teenagers who have helped build tiny houses within a matter of hours. That, if somebody had taught me how to build a tiny house or even a shed at 15, I wouldn't be on this call right now. I'd be somewhere in Hawaii right now.
Well, you know, it gets back to people got to want to do these. Now, I'm saying that I understand what you're saying. But those people that sleep on the bridge, a lot of them want to be that. You know,
Piyaki, you're absolutely right. Most people, we're not going to have a mad rush to get into this. Okay.
No.
You're right. Some people, like, for instance, the reason why we even have It's My House. My mother, when she was living, when I was having trouble with that squad, and Piyaki, you've heard this story before, she suggested, because the woman in question, her dad was a contractor. Her brother-in-law, who she got kicked out of his house, he was the contractor. My mother said, tell her, put this suggestion out to her. Tell, because she was an administrative assistant, the secretary. Suggest to her that she get her dad and her brother-in-law to build her a house, and then they start a business. She run the business, and she's got her house. They got business. Win, all the way. I got out by the squad that I did. But that's okay. Now I'm organizing people to do it. Some people, they can't see it. They can't see it. But for other people, some people that might cuss you out, they've got to see it. You know what?
They don't want
to. Our job isn't to convince anybody. Our job is to go out there once again, start where we are, use what we've got, do what we can, and let the everything fall into place.
You know, you remember the city in North Carolina in Warren County, Soul City, and Nixon,
yeah, you did tell us about it. I remember
President
that.
President Nixon helped put that. Nixon worked to put that together. They had electricity, they had sewer, they had water, they even had factories. With the help of Richard Nixon, he did several cities like that. Soul City, North Carolina, Brooklyn, and another one in South Carolina, Freedomtown, I think it is. People don't want to move there. We designed a poultry farm in Nigeria.
Right.
It produces, on harvest, 360,000 birds for harvest. They have their hatchery, they have their processing, they have their storage, and they have their transportation to distribute them out throughout the country. Now, those people wanted to do that, but other people don't want to do it. The gentleman talked about they have electricity in Africa. Now, they don't have it in every place, but they have their own, production, they have their distribution, and they have their transmission, which is separate and pretty much the case in all three of those. So people got to want to do these things. 750 square miles of land that has everything on it, timber, fresh water, agriculture, minerals, people, it's there, but people don't want to go get it. And like I mentioned the other place. So first of all, people got to want to. And I'm saying that a lot of these people that you call homeless, they homeless because they want to be. Hell, they know if they get sick, they can go get treated. May not be the best in the world, but it's better than nothing. But then it gets to the place of who's going to pay for this. And the municipalities, the people in the municipality who's not in those conditions, they'll help you to get out of those conditions. I'm sure they would. But they don't want to continue to provide that as the norm for you because it costs money.
You know, this is Chris. I've actually been able to get legislation passed nationwide and legislation passed in California and some here in Illinois. The ones nationwide was through HUD, and it is your housing first model and rapid rehousing. By talking with Ben Carson, giving him a plan that what they need to do is put it in legislation because we're already spending the money. But the problem is it's all going into private pockets. Or it's going into the city for their housing developments and they're making money from it. But they're not giving that money back and they're not helping these people move from that point to the next point. So I showed them that if they took Section 8 payments, that they're going to pay to a landlord, they could pay it to this program and other programs, but become homeowners instead of a renter. They have pride. Also give them a chance to build their own home, build others' homes, give them a purpose. When you give someone something and they take it, this is just the way society is right now, and this is the way the welfare system works. And once they're in their house, they don't come back. They don't try to individually. Every one of us is unique. Nobody's going to make your mind up for you, and you don't need to make your mind up for someone else. Because when that happens, that's when you're, like, incarcerated, and you have to do what you're told. And out here, we have free will. So these people that are homeless, if they want to stay in sub-zero weather because that's what they want to do, that's a choice. But I don't think anyone needs to sleep outside unless they're camping. If they decide that they want to sleep outside, then they make that decision. But we don't make the decision for them, but we need to give them the opportunity to actually create a community, have something we ain't never had, and that's unity. And, you know, unity is you and I together is why. And us being on this show
sharing this, having people from all over the country and the world having a conversation about one common goal. Let's feed people. Let's not only feed them in their belly, let's feed them in their soul. I want to know who you are, okay? You are an individual. Every person on and that was out here listening, you are all you. There's nobody else like you. No one's going to do what you do. But if we do things together, and people are amazing, every one of you, there you have superpowers, you just don't know it. If you don't know it, you will find out. And it's about giving a chance, giving a choice, because we all have free choice. And you're also a creator. So let's let their minds start to work when we take them out of the dark. Because being stepped on, disgraced, discouraged, this is not something that is an encouragement. It's not something that's going to build up someone's self-esteem. And that is where people look at people and say, oh, well, you don't have what I got, so you're not as good as I am. You know what? There's nobody's life worth more than another. And the people that have need to realize they can still have, but the have-nots can have as well. They don't have to hold them down. It don't have to be a stranglehold on how our children's future is going to be because of how we're going through today as you and me. We need to open our mind, realize that they are the solution to every adult's problem, and they're inheriting every one of them. So it doesn't matter what's been done in the history. It's time for us to rewrite history, but also write the future. Give them a future. Give them a legacy that will live on forever. And I've worked with our children. I've worked with the homeless. And every homeless person that I speak to, 9.5% of them, you know, 9 out of 10 of them, says, I'm ready to go. So I let them make their mind up. I just took 7 people that said, we can't help them. None of 52 organizations said, I can't help them. There's people on this show listening right now that are part of those organizations, and they're hearing me. I don't need to say their names. They know who they are because of their accountability and their actions. But also, there is people that was scared to death of what I was presenting into the nonprofit realm because they get money and makes their paycheck so they can go home to their houses regardless of the people they're helping. They're only helping 15% across the nation, in every city, in every community, 15%. That leaves 85% to the wayside. I told them, I said, I'll take the 85, and I guarantee we'll pick up that 15. And now they're like, well, what are we going to do when you empty our shelters? Well, it's not house people because you don't know how. I'm in a city with a homeless problem for 100 years. There is so much money in my little city that there should not be a homeless problem, but there's a greed over need. And that's the part of the human nature. Who are you? I'm sorry?
Have you ever heard the stories where criminals will go out and commit crimes in September so they can stay in jail over the winter?
Oh, I've seen,
yes.
I've seen people arrested that way. I was at a bus station. I was waiting on a bus. I was going to Canada. And it was a cold night, and this guy was in a bus station in Washington, D.C., and the guy, he was being disruptive for a person. A reason. So the policeman on duty at the bus station, Greyhound Station, D.C., you know, told him, you know, pipe down, you know, contain himself. Then he started talking shit and putting his hands on the policeman. The guy cut him a break like 3 or 4 times, but he kept on going. Long story short, this guy wanted to get locked up for the night. We're not talking about those people. Okay. On July 4th, 1776, there was no such thing as New York City. There was no such thing as Chicago, of St. Louis, or Washington, D.C., none of those places. Now there are over 19,000 municipal corporation settlements in the United States. There are over 3,800 ghost towns. Those are towns that they tried it, but they didn't make it for whatever reason, or maybe some towns are not set up to be, I mean, they're set up for temporary purposes. All right. I'm saying all that to say, and there are 12 new communities that are popping up every week, people buying land and serving their own communities. I'm saying that all this to say this. Everything starts with one. And we've got more than one on his phone in more than one location. Carlos's project, and our project will work.
Well,
we got
I
more than one
you,
person.
The question, the thing is that you got to have, and I'm sure you guys already know that if that wasn't the case, you wouldn't even be here because all your houses would be filled and there wouldn't be no more market. Like the gentleman said, if you clear out our shelter, then what do we got to do? But the thing is that people have to want to do this. And you can't
have a
market, a business, where you force people to do something that they don't want to. And from what I see, there's nothing stopping people from being off the street and seeking help. Those entities exist, and they should be non-for-profit, your churches and other means, rather than governments yourself. Because then when you go into the government, you're making people get involved who don't want to be involved, just like you're trying to get people to get involved who's in a condition that you don't understand why they continue to want to live that way.
Can I chime in here?
Yes, sir.
Another key part of grassroots innovation is really a bottom-up, top-down approach where you do need the government involved, but they don't need to be the ones actually implementing the solutions. They need to be the ones supplying the structure and the financial support to solve the problems effectively through the nonprofits and the organizations that are really touching the people.
And we already mentioned that the way the money is being spent presently is not efficient. In other words, we can actually help, by going to government saying, how much are you spending on your homeless welfare food stamp problem? And that, I don't know if you guys know that number, LA, but it's got to be pretty incredibly high, especially in cities like that are warm, like Miami and California, et cetera, where if you're going to be homeless, you'd rather be homeless in a place that you're not going to freeze to death, like here in Washington, D.C. But the point that we're trying to make is that we can make this profitable. Well, we can help the homeless and at the same time make it less of a tax burden on the people that don't want to help, right? In other words, right now you're I don't know who that other gentleman is, his name, but he's saying, yeah, but at the end of the day, we, the people, are paying taxes in order to help these people. Well, guess what? We're already doing that, okay? And that money is not being used effectively. So what we're talking about is, hey, let's start building systems that work more effectively and that will help the taxpayers that are paying for these welfare programs, food stamps, et cetera. And it'll also help the communities because when you get these people off the street, and yes, some of them will not want to go. Okay, I agree. They want to be in the woods leading the hobo life. We can't force them, right? But for the people, and I would say the majority of the people that are actually want to improve their lives or have mental health issues and need that sort of support, we're not helping them. And meanwhile, you drive to Washington, D.C., and you've got tents all over the city. You've got vets sleeping two blocks from the White House, in the richest country on earth. There's no excuse for it, especially since we have a way of doing it that will help with the taxes. By making these projects efficient, where now the people get an address, they have a place to take a shower, now they have dignity. Now they're able to grow food. Now they have a skill. Now they're able to sell food. Now they have a job. These villages can produce more electricity than they generate or they consume. So now there's a way for the cities to monetize these things. This is addressing the issues that you're raising in a way that is a win-win for everybody. You know, but you're right. Certain people are going to want to be hermits. You know, that's just
right. Well, yeah,
we're not
going to get everybody. Chris, you might know this guy already. Randy Jones in Eastern Tennessee. He built one tiny house just for him to live in. And after he built it, somebody said, "Can you build me one?" Long story short, he's got a tiny house village with the blessing of a local government in, I think, Newport, Tennessee. So, and there are others like him. He's not the only one. So, you know, is everybody from Nashville trying to rush to Newport, Tennessee? No, but that's all right. Randy Jones, his whole village, from what I know, was financed from the people who actually live in the village. He didn't have any government help, no bank loans, no government help whatsoever. And, he didn't do anything brand new. This country basically was built the same way, and the Amish do it the same way. That's why I admire the Amish and the Mennonite communities, because they basically they have their communities. So it's no, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just come on board with some people on the same page. You don't need a million people. Just get a handful and you'll do just fine. Let's see. All right, we didn't have any interruptions today, so because yesterday was a meltdown. Let's do up some wrap-ups here. Chris, we'll start with you. Anything you want to add on for today?
Hey, I think there was some great things that were discussed today. And people need a purpose. People need to know that they're not alone. And we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just trying to work together. And it's something that we're not used to here in the United States. We're not used to in the world. And, you know, I'm happy to have an opportunity to be part of the United Nations and addressing some problems. But I just found out there are 17 things that the United Nations wants to address. And we are going to address each and every one of them and show that it is a prosperous situation with thousands of careers. Anything and everything you ever thought you might do, there's going to be so many thoughts that you're going to have and you will be able to do. And, you know, we're in the I've done the math on what the production facilities could produce that we have in operation right now with all we got to do is push a button and go. They can produce enough linear footage of material to house all the homeless in the United States in the next year and a half. And that's actually giving it a grace period of 6 months. So that means we could build half again as much more material that will be able to address other problems. And, you know, there's a solution to recover these disasters. They're working them. They're putting the material in place. All we have to do is start redirecting. And we start changing the direction of people and what they're thinking about others. Because it does matter what you think of others and how we judge them. Anybody that's outside, I'm not going to make their mind up for them. I will give them a choice. Now, if I can get them to take the choice that I am directing them toward, then our streets are safer. Our children can know that they are going to be the change. And we do have ways of financing this. We get 20% of electric bills in 17 states and 26 countries. We're an independent business owner for energy.
And all you do is put your account number in a website. It'll never ask you for your credit card. Now, if you're paying an AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile phone, Frontier Internet, Vivint Security System, LifeSeal, put your account number, not go get it, put your account number that you're already paying in this website. Show that you support this, and they will donate 20% of that to this project. That's all 50 states, including Hawaii. So I partnered with 250 Fortune 500 companies. That's Amazon, Walmart, Starbucks. Christmas is coming. Black Friday is coming. We got all this stuff where people are about to spend billions and billions of dollars. Well, now you can get cash back on what you're about to spend, and also a donation go to this. And if we got a penny for the billion items that's going to be sold on Amazon today, where would we be needing to ask for a donation? We just need people to support, show up, do a workshop, and change a life. And I've been doing this 17 years. I've proven my theories to be a fact. I got a congressional endorsement on it. It was hand-delivered to President Obama August 16, 2011, by Congressman Timothy Johnson. Rest in peace, because he's not with us anymore. But that man stood up and hand-delivered it in the Oval Office. And in that paragraph, it says, we've created a way to give the homeless homes and the jobless jobs. This is 2022 going into 2023. What are we going to do? And what are we going to be? This is our choice.
Hey, Chris, did you know Reverend Rice, Larry Rice out of St. Louis?
I believe I've heard his name.
That's somebody you need to talk to. Because it's from me being a kid, Reverend Rice had been in the business of helping the homeless. He's worked out of Missouri, Kansas City, Arkansas, and many other states. He had a low-power TV station that went from Missouri down to Arkansas. He had shelters for the homeless in St. Louis. I know one place that used to be on Washington Avenue. He had a compound in Jeff City, which is the capital of St. Louis, the capital of Missouri. And his compound was right out of Jeff City, where they had gas manufacturing. He had windmills. He had solar. He had earth homes. And he was training homeless to implement all that. And he also put a program in place where people could check off on their gas bill to pay an extra dollar for that month. And he accumulated millions of dollars that he used in order to alleviate the homeless. Now, many of the shelters are closed. I guess maybe the homeless problem went away, was solved. But he's still around, if I'm not mistaken. You should contact him and see how he done all that. Larry Rice.
I would definitely love to. Yeah, I'd love to get a hold of him, actually. And
Reverend Larry Rice at that, yes.
Larry Rice. Well, thank you. That's wonderful. And like you said, you know, this man, this is what one man's vision was. Not just one man doing the work, though. And he wound up getting a team of people. And we have a team of people. We have thousands and thousands of people in this team. And, you know, it was my dream. But every dream is a reality that hasn't happened yet until it has happened. And now we have this reality. And I'm going to reach out and find Reverend Larry Rice. I do appreciate that very much, because that's what it takes. You sharing something with me that's going to be able to accelerate what it is that we're trying to be. And, you know, to me,
that program was called a Dollar Help Program, and it was incorporated with then at the time, Lee Gas Company. It allowed people to check off and add an extra dollar in their gas payments. That was voluntary.
Right.
and people step forward. It's not that people don't want to, but so many things have came down the pipe from snake medicine and everything else. And people are just looking to see something work. Homeless should not be a continuing going on thing. It should get to a point where there is no more. And then the people that became homeless, there should be programs, there should be efforts where they don't become homeless. I mean, that's very simple. But seemingly, like you made mention when the person said, if you got cleared out of shelters, what will we do? People make money off of the suffering of other people. I'm sorry to say that, but that's one of the human traits that we have. And that needs to go away.
No, you're 100%
correct. I call them poverty pimps.
That's right. And we're going to be the prosper people. We don't have to be a pimp. And we can just be the prosper people, because I want to make our line of poverty be prosper. And if we work with our children, we can change this right now, set them up with generational wealth, but also give them a home they'll never be thrown out of. You know, I am a 501c3 charity, and I belong to every child on earth. They're my partner. Every adult has to earn it by learning it. And I thank you adults for coming on here and doing so. What I'd like to see is all of you share this kids around you after today, because they're going to be home. And let's talk to them. Let's hear what they have to say. Let's put a challenge out right now over Thanksgiving, and let's be truly thankful when it's over. And let there be a blessing that's going to change the new year, and we actually set out a resolution with a solution to end this problem. And we can do that. And it's something that I won't let you fail, because I'm going to be there with you. And it just, whether or not we give up, and I don't like to quit. Especially if you can't tell me a negative reason not to do it. I got a house that don't burn, don't absorb water, stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable, build it without a dumpster, build it cheaper than wood, and get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home. You give me one positive reason to build out of wood, and I'll shut up. I've asked a million people that question, and ain't nobody gave me an answer. So that keeps me moving. That's been 17 years of my life. I walked away from profit to evidently become one, but it's to show people how they can become profitable. So this isn't about me. It's about we, and I do thank you all for the show, for everybody that was involved, anybody that's got to talk, anybody that didn't, please come back tomorrow. And let's make a difference. Let's be the change we want to see. Let's thank Gandhi for those words. And I love them because they just come to me. And it's what I want to be. So thank you.
And I'm throwing out an action step so we can get this get some on-the-ground feet on this. This is out of a page out of the Freedom Georgia Initiative, what they do. They have Zoom calls. They ought to be Zoom calls, but for convenience, Carlos, I'm going to suggest a suggestion. You do what you want to do. Is they have the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They communicate practically every day. So, Carlos, you already have a room, and so do you, Chris, on Clubhouse. So if you can pick out, I mean, if you want to do it, just a suggestion. Have a room where we can dialogue no less than 3 times a week or as many times necessary. We have that constant communication so we can actually, because, I mean, yesterday we had a guy before we got dropped. One guy called in, and he's got land in Wisconsin and Mississippi. Farmer Jay's got 100 acres in Belize. Another lady that talked to you, I think, last Friday, she's got 2 acres outside of Orlando, Florida. So all we need to do is connect the dots and just focus in on one. Just do one. If we do one beta project and get that off the ground, then we can really escalate from there. So that's just my suggestion. Anyway, Carlos, you got the floor.
Oh, Carlos, you first.
Go ahead, Nick. I'll go after you.
Oh, I was just saying that's what I'm excited to be a part of the team is helping scale his mission and vision to help so many more people. That was a big part of my program was – and we just had an awesome –
Can we put this out to the Arizona State University? You know, maybe there's students or whatever, because Chris had this idea just the other day of having a room that runs 24/7. Of course, we would need mods to take shifts, you know, to you need a mod in the room to keep the room open, et cetera. But there's the
room. I'll sign up for 1 hour a day. I'll sign up for 1 hour a day, 7 days a week.
Beautiful. Okay.
And we need 48 people to do a half
hour. We need 24 people to do that, and we've got 24 hours, right? I'll volunteer for an hour a day. I'm already doing an hour a day anyway, so it'll be easy. So I know Chris will – well, Chris is out walking the talk, so I don't know if we want him off of – you know, he's boots on the ground.
I'll do this for you, Carlos. I will do as much time of the 24-hour day as I possibly can be in that room. And it'll be way more than an hour.
Well, you know something? We've got Hope for Dream Habitat, It's My House, live right now. The room is – I think the problem – it's being recorded, and I think after a certain point you can't record it anymore. But you know what? We don't care, right?
On a blog talk platform, they give us two and a half hours a day. However, on Clubhouse, there's no limit from what I understand.
Right. So what I'm saying is right now I'm doing a room as we speak. This conversation is being transmitted. I'm not transmitting the room anymore. But anyways, I was transmitting the room, this podcast in a room under Dream Habitat, and it's called Hope for Dream Habitat Project 2023 by It's My House TV. You know, I've got the link to your blog post there. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just keep this room as long as we can keep it open? I've already made you guys co-hosts.
All right, that's fine. The main thing is we want the name out there, which you already have. And you set up the platform and just keep it out there. Just keep it out there.
It's going. It's going. I'm not going to close this room.
Carlos, can you tell them about Joy's conversation with her yesterday? Because it's exactly what he said. We just need to pick a couple of projects and do it.
Yeah, we've got some really interesting projects. We've got recently... and I don't know if Chris should update Chris on this. We were contacted by Joy, who I also believe knows you from Clubhouse, and she's part of a group that's doing eco resorts, you know, for wellness, places you can go and meditate and eat organic food, et cetera.
There's the community grid.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Nick, because you probably remember more than I do.
The Community Grid Project, they're connecting farmers, health resorts, and basically people that want to escape city life and helping them experience the farm life, connect with nature, and see if it's something that they really want to be a part of. They'll help you work, connect with work jobs. They'll mentor you. They'll train you. They do educational events, and they're excited to they've got builders, too, so they're excited to pick out a couple areas and connect with these people and see if we can just start popping up the structures.
So it looks like we have our first project. And also the interesting thing is that what I mentioned to that team from Joy and her team is that once we build that resort, there's also the commercial opportunity of now giving them a franchise on their model for their region. So this all works really nicely with both, it's going to be a project that we can get on the books. And, of course, we can raise money that way so that way we can start doing the real projects, which are the projects to help. We're thinking doing them in parallel. You know, if we can find You know, right now we've got this interest from this one group, but as LA has mentioned, we need to get something on the books ASAP. So we need to get with Chris and get the design down with his manufacturing process for, you know, the all steel construction for the greenhouses. And he's already got the tiny home designs. And then we just need to come and execute this project. And where is she located again, Nick? All over the place, right?
Yeah, no, they've got places on Florida, Arizona, Texas, Ohio. I think they're like
now. We got 100 acres in Belize that was looking. Okay, this is all coming together because we just had Farmer Jay on who has 100 acres in Belize. And now we have an organization that develops eco-resorts. And I think Belize is a pretty nice place to be. If I've never been there, but my understanding is it's quite incredibly beautiful. Wow. Anyways, I'm going to stop here because I'm getting too excited.
And yesterday you had a guy on, yesterday you had a guy on that had property in Mississippi as well as Wisconsin. I forgot how many acres he has. Okay,
now, LA,
well,
you got the invite for the.
There are no shows scheduled.
I guess the Blog Talk Radio is already off, right? They gave it 2 hours, and now we're not. We're just
talking. We're in overtime because it records everything until we go off there. But we're in overtime now. But. The topic was just like in that link I sent you, because I wanted to get that out there. And like I say, if we can just have one platform, well, a 24-hour platform, which you already set up, and that's where Clubhouse comes in at, because like I say, this other group, Freedom Georgia Initiative, they did two things that I think they had tours, but more importantly, they had a constant line of communication going on practically every day. They're having calls, and that's why they were able to go from zero to 97 acres to 502 acres, because they were in constant communication every day. So if a problem comes up, a solution comes up. And, you know, a lot of the negative stays out. The trolls to help because they have constant communication. So we already got some momentum going, let's just keep it going. And Clubhouse is probably the easiest way to do that.
Right.
I mean, we got here every day. I mean, 2 days, we got 2 hours a day every year you want it. All right. But I'm just saying after that, because people have ideas and we can't save the world in 2 hours. But we can probably do it in 24 hours. Okay. So.
Well, guess what? I'm going to put out a challenge right now. Everybody that's listening to this or listens to this down the road, go to get Clubhouse. It's a free app. Register for Clubhouse and search for Dream Habitat. That's the name of the club. It's called Dream Habitat. I try to change it to Hope for Dream Habitat, but once you name a club, you can't change the name for some stupid reason. Or if somebody figures that out, let me know. But right now, we have a room.
You would have to open up a new room.
Right. But no.
But you know what?
You already have things set up.
Just keep it going.
Right now, you can join. You know, right now, people could jump into this room that's live. I'm playing house music in there. I've got my computer playing house music, but I can always shut it off. But now we have a room that can run 24/7. As long as we get people to sign into it and I make them moderators, now we can have a room that goes on indefinitely. Because my understanding is when the last moderator leaves,
Carlos,
I think the room ends.
Carlos, let me ask you this. When could we have our first meeting over there dealing with, finding a place where we... Okay. Well, either today or tomorrow, or, you know, what's the time that I guess you might want to think about this. I don't know. But we need a time, a day part. I mean, afternoon, evening,
right
what, you
after
know.
Your show? How about right after your show, since we'll be
No, he's trying to pick out, like, a weekly time that would be good for us to host a community talk around this, like, even, like, three times a week. I think
Nichols has got it. That's what I'm talking about.
You're doing the
show. Some people might be at work. Some people might be at school. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe an evening time. I don't know. I don't know what people's schedule.
I think evenings would be good for, because West Coast is a couple hours behind too.
Right.
Oh,
Nichols, what time do you suggest?
Mornings are rough.
Because Nichols, are you a mountain time or Pacific? You're a mountain or Pacific?
I'm on mountain.
Okay.
So
what times would you suggest?
2 to 4 here, so like maybe like 5 to 8 East Coast. Or even later.
All right,
a little
5
bit.
O'clock is all right. 5 o'clock here would be rush hour. What about 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time? That would be 4 p.m. your time.
Yeah, no, that would work for a majority of people.
Carlos, what about you? Carlos, what's good for you?
I've got yoga every day at 7 o'clock, from seven
okay,
to 8. So for me, what would work better would be 8 DC
time. Oh, right
time,
after yoga?
Which would be,
yeah, no, that,
which
we, that'd be better here because we get over 8
p.m. Eastern Standard Time?
That would work for me.
That would work for me, too.
Even later, you know, actually even later because my wife's already, well, let's not
8:30?
Talk about that. I've got yoga from 7 to 8, and then I eat a quick meal.
Well, I'll tell you what, Carlos, sleep on it, and tomorrow give us a time.
Okay. What about 9
o'clock?
We'll go
with that.
Work.
9 p.m.
I think he settled at 9.
All right, 9 p.m.
Work, cause that'll
all right, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that gives people on the East Coast, I mean, not the East Coast, the Mountain Time and Pacific Time, rather. All right, good. All right, that's good.
Yeah, that'll be
6
9
p.m. starting tomorrow night?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, 9 p.m. starting tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and that gives us time
you
to get it out to people.
Tonight? You want to start?
Now, let's get it out to people. Everybody get in their networks, and we'll start 9 p.m. Tomorrow night.
Everybody that's got Clubhouse, join the room right now, and I'm going to make you a moderator and stay on it as long as you can, but make sure that if you're going to leave and there's no other moderators, don't leave. Just leave your phone on and call me or something, and I'll jump in. But we need to – I've got my computer as a moderator already. So the only way that this room will die is if my computer dies right now. However, if we get other people into the room and they're made mods, they can keep the room alive. That's how they keep these rooms going forever, by the way. They have
right.
moderators that come in and keep the room alive. So right now, whoever's listening, get on Clubhouse, join the Hope for Dream join the Dream Habitat room, which is going to be renamed Hope for Dream Habitat. And right now you will see that there's a live room going on right now in the Dream Habitat Club, and it's called Hope for Dream Habitat Project 2023. And it says by It's My House, you know, so I've got a link to It's My House blog post, which of course I want to promote you as well, LA, obviously, since you're so incredibly.
Well, I'm looking at this as a win-win with everybody because, look, as Nicholas stated, look, if we get one or two what I call beta project, something that's done, just one,
yep.
really just one, and then scale it from there. Matter of fact, if you get one done, it'll be easy to scale. So that's
right.
what I'm looking at. We don't need
it's
a million people.
Pitch.
We don't need 100 people. Just get one up, and then we scale from there.
I love it.
Keep it simple. All right, on that note, before they boot us out of here, because we got booted out yesterday, everybody, thanks. See you guys later. Join Clubhouse if you haven't. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks, guys.